Careful. Here they come.
I think maybe...
Uh-oh!
There's all sorts of wonderful things about this movie, all sorts of wonderful jumps that it makes from the first one. And I think the best one is that they're doing illegal, unethical experiments on sharks in the first one to work on a cure for Alzheimer's. And in this one, they're doing illegal, unethical experiments on sharks to cure ADHD.
That's real adversity, okay? Between the two, I'm a fucking hero for carrying on the way I do.
I remember when my great-grandmother was in the nursing home and she kept forgetting where she put her keys, but just because she wasn't paying that much attention.
Oh my god. What if that's like the main guy's villain arc? Is that he's just like very insecure about having ADHD. What if he gave a villain monologue and used the word neurodiverse while he was like Shakespeare growling?
I've developed a cure for imposter syndrome.
My story began when I was a gifted kid.
I want him to tear his ADHD ID medical card while he does, a really impassioned speech.
I want a cello solo while he, like, opens a capsule of Adderall and just pours the powder into his mouth like a fucking sicko.
Slow motion as he wraps an emotional support animal vest around a shark.
Oh, fuck.
You see, I've battled with rejection-sensitive dysphoria since I was a child.
We have found the cure for gender dysphoria, and it lies in sharks.
Holy shit. I like this movie a lot. This movie just... Mm-hmm. It's, you know, obviously it's much lower budget. It has much less to say and do, but it manages to scratch that same itch. I was like a little worried because it doesn't pop off quite as quickly. It feels like the lead up takes a little bit longer. But once we get there, who doggies, is it ever the exact kind of stupid that I want to just like hold close to me and prom dance with?
Yeah, I deeply enjoyed watching this film. I just had such a good time. I definitely was like, damn, a lot of chit chat, a lot of wading through water. I was missing some of the really fun action bits from the first film that they just like didn't have enough money to make happen.
Yeah.
They were just like, if we stick them all in like different colored hallways, like that should do it.
That's exactly it.
One hallway that we switch the gels out for.
Not like, even the gels. Not even the fucking gels. They went to Adobe Premiere Pro and didn't even color correct it. They looked under one of the file bins for video effects and one of them just says like red. And you just drag it and drop it onto the file. And then everything is through a red filter. And you can use that fucking flooded hallway as many times as you want, bitch.
And they did. They did. And that's the real star of the show, was the flooded hallway in green, blue, and red.
In glorious green, blue, and red. You know, I mean, the movie, you know, the franchise takes a little bit of a hit when they couldn't afford... a parakeet wrangler in Cape Town, South Africa.
Yeah.
Where Honey 3 was being filmed on the other side of the city.
True.
By the way, are we... What is this fucking podcast called again?
Oh, right. Welcome to Dead Horse, a podcast where we discuss under-discussed film franchises, the fucking overextended, underbaked, loved. What are the do this pretty often. Like this is a project I've stuck to more than many in my life. Why can't I remember a list of three adjectives to say once a week?
overlooked and under-discussed.
Yeah, that's great. That's good.
I like it.
I'm Dixon, and you remember me from trying to do a weighted chin-up the other day ago, and instead not doing that.
I'm Becky, and you remember me from getting sore by walking on sand for about 30 minutes. Next day, really feeling it. Really hurts the arches. So, beach not so relaxing?
Epic beach prank? Not so relaxing?
Not gone a joke. Gone wrong. Just like me. It's just a still of me holding my arch up like,
With sand falling out of your other hand.
And there's a scary Italian clown behind you.
Epic Italian clown prank.
And it says, cheats at the end? And you're like, wait, who's...
I'll admit, it is way scarier for a clown to just rise up out of the water during broad daylight than it is for them to, like, peer out from behind a tunnel at night in Italy. Because that's where clowns belong.
Yeah.
That's where they live.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the episode where the Sopranos crew goes to Italy, is how Paulie, like, just kind of doesn't understand the cultural differences, and when he sees the Italian clown in the alley, he goes, Maron, and shoots it, and Furio is like, no, in the north, we the clowns.
My name is PJ, and you remember me from that time that everyone got really fucking mad at me because they said I was being irresponsible, that I like reached my arm into a shark's mouth, but I was honestly really anxious and I'm like working on myself and I'm like doing a lot better. And it's honestly really fucked up the way you got like so fucking mad at me when I was like already telling you I'm like literally so stressed out right now. Sometimes you just have to reach your arm into a shark's mouth and then just like try to get like a dental culture from like the gums to see if it's pregnant.
Yeah, you were just really pissing me off the way you behaved with your arm in the shark's mouth. I just feel like you really could have handled that much better.
I just feel like I'm doing all this work and you like never give me credit for like any of it. I had a mango popsicle today around the time that I normally get really hangry, and it's just like I'm just like doing my freaking best right now.
Using the brain of the bull shark, nature's perfect predator, I've developed the key to self-crit.
Oh, this is gonna be one of those, isn't it?
I honestly woke up at 3, we're recording at 4. I honestly was like, maybe I should crack open a beer. Like, cause this is just, it's got big, like, for me, it's got big, like, Honey 2 vibes for me, but in a much better way. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
This movie rides a really... honestly difficult to straddle line of like self-awareness but still taking itself seriously enough to be entertaining. It's not like just kind of a Sharknado jerk off where it's like, whoa, isn't this stupid. It like, and I think a lot of that is due to the weirdly committed cast. Everyone is really trying. Like, they're trying their little hearts out.
Nobody's tried more than each person individually while they're speaking.
And there's, like, several scenes where it was clear that they're like, okay, so you're looking out the window at the shark bopping a guy in his scuba outfit and just react. And they're all going like, is he going to be okay? Yes. Oh, my God. Keep going. Oh, no, the shark. Is he alive? I don't know. Oh God!
They're like riff, 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 riff. Yeah. Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And they're just like giving it their all. Everyone's face is just like frozen in a perma grimace of just like shock and awe and fear and disgust. Everyone's just like, are you fucking crazy? And the other person's like, are you fucking crazy? And it's just shock and awe on top of shock and awe, and it's just so much fun to watch.
These sharks can suck my ass.
Oh my God, I love that this movie supplies us not one but two nerdy tech guys, uh-huh, who can who can say stuff like, "Now this is not freaking good," with the height of conviction. No, I mean, you know, this cast doesn't have any names or faces I recognized. I gather that if I'd ever seen John Dies at the end, I would have known Rob Mays from something. Is it Daniel Sarve who plays Misty?
Yeah, yes. I think so.
The closest I get to, like, knowing who anyone is, I guess Michael Beach was in If Beale Street Could Talk and Aquaman. But most of these are, like working TV actors. A lot of them are native to South Africa. And I didn't think there was a bad actor in the bunch, and that everyone is so committed to, like, all right, baby, fucking showtime. Warner Premiere, home entertainment, this is my fucking break. Like, let's go. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a little baffled by the, like, starkly bad reviews of this. I mean, this isn't, like, a great movie, but this is a perfectly functional little, like Fuddruckers, like Deep Blue Sea sequel. And I have to wonder, like, if this had, like, richer, more famous, more recognizable people attached to it and got a theatrical release, do you not think people would, like, eat this up and, like, accept it and like, go along with it? Because that's something that crossed my mind.
It, for me, it's, like, that surprised me, too, because, you know, it's a weird set of circumstances this movie is born into. It's, like, a, you know, 20-year belated DTV sequel to a movie that was kind of successful. And, mm-hmm. you know, all that being such, I think it's the best one of those that can be, really. Like, this movie doesn't have any grand ambitions or anything. It just is like, well, you know, sharks again. Mm-hmm. And as far as sharks again go, there's very little else I could ask for.
Sharks again in the exact same formula we left off in. The sharks are busting in, water's pouring into the corridors, and there might be sharks on the premises. And it's just so, it's just the formula is deliciously identical, and I really enjoyed watching it. To your to answer your question from my perspective, Peej, I feel like while the actors are giving everything, that I think might be why there's this beautiful straight to DVD element of, like, human weirdness behavior. Like, nothing is ever quite real. Everyone's really flexing the entire time. Like, it looks like they're walking and posing at the same time. Like, everybody's body is stiff as a board. And I think that the effort that's gone into it and the lack of contact that each actor is making is why it feels wrong. Like, it just feels just, like, not correct. But I loved watching it because every interaction was really funny and interesting as a result of that. So I am curious if it were a different cast and then they got a director to be like, hey, let's try this again. Because I had a really great time watching it. Though I do think that for a cast that is largely working actors, they relied on so much dialogue to carry this film. And I think that was their biggest mistake. We needed way more action, way more shark, and way more shark attack and death, because we just got way too much chit chat.
Yeah, this movie is about an hour and a half long, and I want to say, like, the shark stuff really doesn't take off until, like, the 50-minute hour mark. Like,
yes.
The last 45 or so minutes of this movie, absolute banger, a hard recommend, A+, 5 stars from me. But, like, they really, I feel like by half an hour in the first one, we were getting Europeans torn the TF apart. And that extra 20 minutes of a guy just trying to defend his shark science, I think really, like, it drags it down a little bit. The plot of this movie is basically, like, if at the Coke Freestyle machine, the Jurassic Park selection had very little syrup left in it, so it was mostly just seltzer in your cup. Basically, there's a famous shark woman who teaches sharks in college, and a lawyer finds her and is like, hey, why don't you come to this shark zone, this other shark jail in Cape Town. The wealthy shark man Carl Durant is there and he wants your input on something. She's like, okay. She gets to this new shark jail, much worse looking, and like, you know, discovers this other ragtag team of scientists who he's gotten to sort of show Jurassic Park to. And he, of course, is, you know, an eccentric madman who's been taking this new shark brain drug he's developed to be smarter and have numbers fly at his head like ninja stars. And of course, making the smarks that shark, the smarks, fuck.
Smarks.
Did it again. The smart, of course, making these smarks was a bad decision. The smarks get loose in the facility and begin to eat everybody. And also, one of the sharks was pregnant and gave birth to a bunch of little sharks that also eat people.
I want to know the size of when sharks are born. Do they come out like fucking little, like 3-inch fish? Like, they're so small. They're really cute.
Do sharks also give birth to 100 children at once?
I think it's not. That
I feel like it's gotta be
like one at a time or a few at a time, not like 8 or 9,
because it's like they're big creatures. It's not like hippos give birth to like, well, 30, and then, you know, the nature balloon. Will cull them.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30 hippos all making little Frank Welker noises.
The baby sharks in this film, the way that the camera shows them from above water while they're like running away from them in these like water filled like corridors is just like, it's just a bubbler machine under the water, and that's supposed to signify these baby piranha-esque sharks about to attack like whoever we're watching. And it's so ridiculous. It's so funny every time, and they're like, and you're like,
so cute.
But 100% like sharks don't even make bubbles like that, right? Like, am I crazy?
Well, these ones do.
Okay, see, that's Bella's sort of special touch on her children.
Je ne sais quoi, mm-hmm. You know, as a shark. You know how there are, like, mob killers who, like, leave a thing at the scene of the crime? Like, everyone knows that, like, Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin in Daredevil, like, leaves a rose at the crime scene.
The wet bandits.
Exactly. Where they just leave, like, a little bit of water. You know, these baby sharks.
That's what happened to this station. Is Daniel Stern just left the sink on too much? The baby sharks got in there.
Oh no, there's baby sharks coming for me. I can see the bubbles from miles away. That's just straight up adorable.
It was cute. It was cute. I wasn't scared. I was like, come on, they're probably fine.
Oh, PJ, also, I'm so sorry. I like just totally interrupted your riff to do mine. I was like, nah.
You're good.
No, I'll you're make good. The Daniel Stern jokes on this podcast.
I'm on an uncrashable emotional wave right now. Thinking of a bunch of baby sharks making a wrong turn at Albuquerque like Bugs Bunny. With, like, the little dirt trail and all, only it's water.
Right before the bombs go off that blow up the station, a bunch of baby sharks holding up a little wooden sign that says, Mother!
I guess my biggest issue with this movie is that, number one, I don't understand the difference between a teleplay and a screenplay. Are they formatted differently, or are they just credited differently?
Ooh,
number two...
Sure.
Why didn't the baby sharks have a redemption arc? Why couldn't one of the good guys take the shark cum that makes you smart and good at tests? Why couldn't he take that and then command the baby sharks to be like, you know, attack that man who's insecure about his imposter syndrome and being a gifted kid. Attack him. And then they're friends and they're not like a danger to the people at the beach at the end. They all jump around. The hero guy, Trent Slater, and they're his friends. He has a little aura of little baby sharks who are his friends. I think if they were gonna do this, like, Jurassic World on a budget of $5 million thing, I just think there should have been animal friends. Can we talk about the name Trent Slater for a second?
I want to talk about this guy really badly because in the beginning of the movie, like in his first scene, the movie opens with these two elite fishermen doing illegal shark fin chopping. And of course, they get deep blue seed. But it's at this point, after they are killed, it's revealed that the shark what killed them is controlled via remote. Trent Slater, who Wikipedia insists is a highly decorated ex-Navy SEAL, shows up and controls these sharks. And he's like the Tom Jane of this movie, the, you know, shark wrangler guy, except he is so fucking alpha. Like, he is so, like, constantly on the verge of, like, really guttural cursing. Like, God damn it! Like, that's what he's riding the cliff of this whole movie, and it rules. He's so about to be pissed off constantly. None of these characters, and I think that this is good, have an arc. Like, he doesn't, you know, learn to respect the sharks any more than he does now. He doesn't, like, hate his boss any more than he does now. He doesn't fall in love with Dr. Misty Calhoun. He's just, like, this fucking violent asshole the whole movie. Just going, like, God damn it! As more people get eaten by sharks.
I like that, too. I like a pretty low arc action horror blood fest like that. I just want to see who gets out. That is the arc. Did they live? So it's like delicious when they don't change and they were weird the whole time.
They were so weird. Like,
nobody was like, I know that person in my life.
I think the closest a character comes to in any way recognizably human is the is nerd number two.
Yes.
The guy who kind of looks like Nick Rutherford. I really liked him. I think he like was afforded the dialogue that allowed for the most like kind of, you know, huge air quotes here, but naturalism.
Yes,
like,
agreed. Yeah. I thought both the nerds were pretty winning. I thought that Nathan Lynn, who plays Aaron, I thought that he did a really admirable job sort of carrying a lot of the emotional panic, like narrating the emotional panic of everybody and making that like believable and fun and like a little bit funny or at least recognizable, like you're saying, Dixon. I thought that they were both good. I don't know why there was two of them, though. And and boy, did they bicker. Oh, my goodness. Get two nerds in a film, and they're just going to fight in that watery corridor. I was just like, guys. Like they were like, we got to get out of here. And he was like, no, dude. Like, no. And they're, like, fighting over something, and then they come to a conclusion. Cut away. Come back. Dude, I told you, we gotta get out of here. And he's like, listen, man. And I'm like, you guys just solved this problem. There was so much clunky, inconsistent dialogue in this that made it so watchable. Just like nothing.
Well, the writers also, I mean, I think they made a mistake in how long they took to get to the shark stuff. But once they get to the shark stuff, they know the reason we're here, so much so that all other concerns get thrown out the window. The bickering scene you were talking about, Becky, I'm pretty confident that whatever they're bickering about, whether it's to stay and wait, one of them is like, we got to stay and wait for help. And one of them is like, no, dude, we got to go. They cut away. They do another scene. They cut back to them and they have switched viewpoints.
Yes. Yes.
And they're still bickering. Like the guy was weird saying like, we got to stay. It's like, no, come on, dude. We got to go find help.
They literally switched viewpoints. And then also Aaron, who had been like, we're going to fucking die here. Cut to the corridor. He's like, I actually have hope. He's like, I actually have hope. He's like, how can you have hope, man? He's like, I don't know, I just do. And I was like, I'm so confused about who you are, but I just love you.
Throwing an Oscar at my television screen with a football spiral. I fucking,
oh, it was so amazing.
What is that moment where Aaron has gotten pushed into the water by Durant, the tech billionaire who is investing in shark cum for his brain.
Mm-hmm.
He pushes Nerd Guy into the water to demonstrate that he can turn the sharks away and that their remote control system is pretty foolproof, and he gets his shoe chewed on. Later on, we catch up to them, and Nerd Guy is very quietly telling him, like, hey, man, like, that wasn't cool earlier. And Durant is like, well, you were safe. And he goes, yeah, I know, but it wasn't cool. That's one of my favorite interactions I've ever seen someone have with a villain is like, hey, dude, like, dick move, like, hanging James Bond upside down like that.
Dude. It started that. I love that interaction, too. That was purely, like, directors, like, come on, riff. We just need you to, like, be talking when she enters the room. And I think how it started, Peach, was he was like, you're fine. Come on.
That's it. Walk it off.
He was like, you're pussy. Fine. It's not big deal. You're fine. Look at you. And he's like, I know, but.
Well, I want a whole movie of that.
There was plenty in this. He was also cut to the 100% scientist newlywed couple. Yeah, mm-hmm. And they are scientists, so stop questioning it.
And they are newlyweds.
And yes, they fuck so much sexual chemistry.
They fuck so much sexual chemistry.
They fuck, comma, so much sexual chemistry.
I
beg pardon.
They do a lot of shoulder kissing, which is like the hallmark of yes, we do have sex, you know. Mm-hmm. But in one of the scenes where they're walking, where camera enters a little earlier than we should, he's like, and by the way, a lot of this is due to some of the research that you've actually given us. You know that, right? It's just like such straightforward improv.
That's you know, so fucking funny.
No matter how much, like, this is I'll check with her and make sure this is okay to include on the podcast, because I don't want to talk out of school here. Savannah and I have talked about marriage. We're not quite sure where we stand on it. I think we're open to, like, doing the marriage thing. But, you know, it's a long-standing discussion.
Totally.
Discussion. I love her so much. And I'm sure if we get married, like, that bond is only gonna grow and get deeper. And no matter how much I love her, I will never talk about her as much as the man of this scientist couple talks about how much he loves his wife, who is standing 6 inches from him. It's like, it's condescending almost. He's talking like she's not there, but just about how much he loves her.
Yeah, I've never seen a more orchestrated love than this. It is just, I've never seen two people who clearly have never met before until like 2 minutes before they started recording. I've never seen it before. I just simply marveled at it. It was unreal. Also, the real stars of the show are those jackets that every person totally picked out for themselves.
Oh, did yes. You like
the fucking jackets? I was just like, wow. They were so distracting to me. Everybody's jacket was just like a Kohl's commercial jacket that like a mom is like marketed at, like, wear this, you can run errands in this, and you'll look kind of cool. And it was just every single person's jacket was the most commercial thing I've ever seen, and always zipped right under tit.
So, if you just like took one of the dialogue scenes, removed the sound from it, and put that song that goes like, hey, yeah, we're a rebel just for kicks. It's an Old Navy commercial.
That's it. That's it.
Absolutely. I want an Old Navy commercial that involves shark piranhas in a watery corridor, but like everybody's really happy to go down in their jackets, you know?
I mean, there's some very strong jacket work in this picture, but that's to say nothing of the fine, fine swimsuits that everyone is vacuumed into. Particularly, I want to give a shout out to Rob Mays as Trent Slater as Scott Throbhard. with his little fucking booty just screaming to get out of that wetsuit that he walks around in looking kind of like a circus strongman from the 1920s who needs a curly mustache and kind of like an action figure.
That's so true.
I mean, what did Wikipedia say? That he's a highly decorated, like, ex-Navy SEAL? Yeah, yeah, I'll say big, he's decorated in that fucking suit, dude. Look at the fucking ass on that dude. Okay, Trent Slater.
Yeah.
Man, they went to the online man name generator, and they pulled out Trent Slater.
He's just got two dicks.
One on each kneecap. He's like, if CrossFit, if a name could do CrossFit, if someone's name could hammer a tire with a jackhammer, with a sledgehammer, if it could fucking pull chains for its workout and grunt.
That is absolutely a name we're just supposed to accept Arnold Schwarzenegger having in a late 80s movie. Like, I'm Trent Slater.
That name was designed to appear on screen in chrome letters that go clang, clang when they appear.
I think it's funny, Dixon, that he came. I actually found him to be a little bit, I didn't even really know what his deal is. I didn't find him too pissed except for his like original, like where he screams like, how did they get out of here at Aaron? And then the rest of it, I just like, he was very hot, admirable, but I didn't find him doing much. I didn't even know what his point of view was about much, except that he wanted to save Misty.
I agree. I think I'm mostly getting the bottled anger just from, like, the clenched-jawed way in which he's playing it.
Totally.
We really, like, I think the highly decorated ex-Navy SEAL thing might be a prank on the part of the Wikipedia's editor. I'm not sure that they mention a thing about his inner life or backstory at
they
all
did.
In this
they
movie.
They did. They said he was a Marine. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, well, that's different than ex-Navy SEALs, so maybe wait, I made that up. I'm almost certain that, like, he had some kind of military background.
You're probably right, I might have just missed it.
It's missable, because did it fucking matter? Like, at least in the first one, our lead guy, like, he had, like, a chip on his shoulder, and that was, like, it was a little pushed, but at least like he had a thing. I don't know what this guy's thing was, but I thought he was really beautiful.
I really liked, I don't know why, because the character is kind of absolutely nothing, but like something about how hot he was or the performance, I was like, yeah, I like Trent Slater.
Yeah, I liked him too, but what does he think about like sharks in the corridor?
Too smart. They're too dang smart.
Oh my god, wait.
Those
smarks are snart. I want to talk a bit about Michael Beach as Carl Durant, who the Joker kicked out of Gotham for being too ostentatious. It's like the most, he's having so much fun.
Yes.
The actor clearly is, and it's like, honestly, a dream role to get to do that much just mustache twirling.
Mm-hmm.
He's just this, you know, eccentric billionaire who's been going off of the deep end because he's been taking his own shark cum drug. He was on Twitter and he saw something with 65,000 likes that said, if you're a gifted and talented kid, you're drinking shark cum to be smart now. And he got so mad, and that's when all the visitors got here. But he's just, like, always on the verge of some absolutely bonkers monologue. He's doing things like, you know, shoving the nerd in to show everybody that these sharks are remote controlled. And my favorite, I think, little interaction at the end is we end this movie where we begin, sort of on the railing of this shark jail, and in order to get to a boat that's kind of far away but there's sharks between, they gotta swim for it. And so the nerd is like kind of like freaking out, being like, no, there's sharks in there, I don't want to go in there. And Dr. Misty Calhoun just shoves him in there, much as Carl Durant did at the beginning of the movie. And it cuts to Carl Durant looking at Misty with the biggest shit-eating grin on his face, and he goes, "It's kind of fun, isn't it?"
Ridiculous. I thought he did a wonderful job. Like, oh, yeah. I thought he was so fun. He made these, like, ridiculous, like, very much like Samuel L. Jackson Pulp Fiction-y, like, monologues of just, like, ultimate grandeur and, like, majesty. Like, he really sold those moments for me. Like, I really believed that that's what he wanted. But it was so ridiculous because his energy was absolutely uncalled for and unmatched. But in a vacuum, I was like, I buy it.
Yeah. He is like an overqualified thespian. Sorry, yes. that's all no, I want to say.
His voice is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, has such, like, vocal command. And, like, I just thought he was really, really freaking talented. It was just such a silly role. Like, just such a ridiculous part. And it really lacked aggression. It was quite cerebral. Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, like, just, like, grit and, like, tenacity. He was just like, I really love my idea! You know, there was no, like, I was expecting some kind of, like, mad scientist, like, Herculean fight at the end of, like, he's taken these drugs and now he's like a, like, Frankensteinian, like, mad power scientist. But instead he was just like, no, like, I just love my sharks and I'm, like, a little bit more manic.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
shark cum will get ya.
It really will.
I also think this is the first time I've ever seen a movie or show or really any piece of media where a person takes a drug and sees equations fly in front of their face that isn't a joke about that idea. Like, he takes his shark cum and he gets smarter.
It is simply the meme of the white woman looking perplexed with equations around her face. Like, it is not a joke. It is exactly that. Like, on a daytime, like forensic, like, investigation, like, drama. It's so ridiculous. And I think I watched it 3 times. I rewound it and watched it 3 times. It was different math and science each time.
The third time it was geography. It was A push.
It was just going through the presidents.
Just like flashy portraits of John Quincy Adams while he's holding his head going, ugh!
Starts getting into poems. I had eaten all of the plums in the icebox. They were so cold.
It's just sentence syntax.
Oh my god, it's diagramming sentences.
It's diagramming sentences. You never get that right.
I heard a fly buzz when I died. The stillness in the room.
That man could tell you what the fuck a participle is.
Oh god, it was so incredible. I was like fucking strapped in. I was like, anything. Give me anything. I love you.
I also... I can't stress enough that we're talking about a whole bunch of ridiculous bullshit in this movie, but it's just, like, wants to be a real movie enough so that it's not exhausting.
Exactly! That's so exactly it! Like, there's enough plot and willpower to actually achieve an objective that I was okay to watch. It was a little lengthy and a little verbose, but, like, I wasn't just, like, it wasn't just, like, all mush.
It's ridiculous, and it's produced by the same, like, brain trust of people whose main output is, like, the DC animated movies, which I guess have been, like, super successful for, like, Warner Home Video. Like, that's where a lot of their bread and butter is after regular, like, theatrical movies don't really do on DVD what they used to. Like, there are people who intended for this to be watched by adults. Just enough for it to not be Honey 2 or Dixon, as you were putting earlier, like thank fucking god this isn't like a cutie poo epic bad movie like Sharknado thing, which I was afraid it was going to be.
Me
like,
too.
That was my fear going in, and I was pleased as punch to see that it was written by people who Seems like, you know, they have aspirations of writing real movies one day.
Yes, 100%. This was a billion times more watchable than Honey 2, in my opinion. It was, like, similar in its flavor. It had sort of notes of poor choreography and terrible dialogue, but it had...
Blue Dye number 40.
Yeah, but it had so much... It was just so much more watchable, and I think a part of that is it's just such a fun idea.
Yeah.
And also, I think that there is as much respect for the source material as you can have in this kind of, you know, 20-year sequel. Like, a lot of the kills are sort of, like, tweaks of Deep Blue Sea 1 kills. The one that, like, that kicks everything off is pretty clearly a direct homage to the Samuel L. Jackson kill, where a scuba diver... a really gung-ho scuba diver goes out and gets knocked around by the shark, but then Trent Slater dives back out and rescues him, brings him in. Dr. Misty Calhoun gives him CPR, and he stands up above, like, the shark pool, and he goes, "Like I said, these sharks can kiss my ass!" And then the shark leaps out and bites his head off.
Hell yeah.
And, like, there is also, like... A whole bunch of the kills are bad CGI, but they're always mixed with enough practical stuff to, like, really give it impact. And after the CGI shark bites his head off, there is a wonderful shot of this headless dummy just wiggling around.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Like one of the air dancing guys in front of car dealerships for a few seconds.
Just enough. It's
just enough.
Right, to the sound of blissful heavy metal.
I was just about to say, the score, the entire score, yeah, takes a turn into Pantera Town and just starts fucking crunching away, and just, it lets unto itself. And, you know, I looked up, the score for this thing didn't really stand out to me, but it's by a guy named Sean Murray, who does lots of straight-to-DVD, junky action movies I didn't know existed. He did a bunch of Call of Duty movies. But did you know that he is the writer, songwriter, and also vocal performer of that fucking weird Karen O-ass, like, James Bond song in the opening credits?
No.
Oh! It's like a growling guy who's like, "Oh, I go into the blue." It's, yeah.
I cannot believe I forgot about the opening credits to this movie.
Oh my god, the Deep Blue Sea song?
Because the James Bond comparison is really apt, but it's one of the James Bond songs where they say the title a lot and it doesn't sound great. It's because he's just going down to the deep blue sea.
We gotta share a clip of it if we can find
it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
For sure.
And then you just have to picture a svelte body swimming. And how could you get sucked into this movie if you don't look at vacuum-packed tits in a swimmer's suit to Deep Blue Sea?
I go into the blue.
With the exception of Trent and Carl, both of whom are pretty large folks, with the suits everyone's in, it's like everybody has the body, like, has Funko Pop body. Like,
holy fuck.
Teeny, tiny.
Jesus Christ.
Ah, goddamn.
How do you guys feel about Danielle? Let's do it.
Hold on. Danielle as Misty?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a shark conservationist.
She's got a lot of heart and a lot of attitude, I'll tell you that. She really tells it like it is.
Oh, no.
I, like, every line that she has, there is an implied, "So you mean to tell me?"
She's the grimace I was referencing earlier. It's unbelievable how she's just, like, wanting to laser beam her glare into the other person's eyes and just, like, eradicate and zap their brains. It's a little much. I think she's so committed and obviously talented, but it's like she's misplacing so much energy for most of the film.
It's I think that's in large part because pretty much every line she has is like an angry summation. It's an angry summation of what someone else is doing.
Exactly.
Like, she is mad about what's happening quite reasonably and then is rephrasing it to be like, so you're torturing these poor sharks so that you can get your precious Adderall 2 out to the market or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's most of what she has to say.
It's and not like, an easy job.
She definitely gets the hardest role to pull off here because it's trying to give your character an emotional journey while also being like the moral explainer.
Yes.
It's a toughie, and everybody else gets like, I'm a nerd, or I love my wife, or I'm a highly decorated ex-Navy SEAL.
I think what stood out to me is that is she maybe she's a little lost at sea.
Wait, I never thought about that. Holy
how
shit.
How about no, I think she seems like a qualified performer with kind of tricky material and a director who I don't know if he can solve like the problem here. But I was actually kind of surprised by how much I liked Misty. Like, I like that there is a surprisingly intelligent person that we can anchor into through this story who is asking the same bewildered questions about, like, so you're just evil, right?
Are you going to tell me that you're the devil?
Are you going to tell me that you're evil right now, or do we need to wait 3 hours for you to tell me that you're evil? I like the hook of shark conservation. I like the hook of this has a really great like cold open where South African Bert and Ernie are cutting shark fins, and which is a real thing that like endangers sharks, is that it's this bourgeois dish in like certain parts of the world where you eat shark fin soup. I like all of that hook, and I like her suspicion towards all of this. Like, if this were a first draft of a screenplay, I would say very good work, keep going on Misty. 'Cause I mean, you know, she's also like, she's also super fucking boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Dr. Misty Calhoun. I like her okay. She's brave. She's got fucking grit.
She does have grit. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would agree that she's boring, but she is a hero that we can anchor to throughout this because she cares about the people she just met, and she cares about sharks, and she cares about eradicating these Frankensteinian sharks that are actually monsters, which she points out. So I appreciate her perspective. I just found it really unfair writing. It's so hard on an actor when you give every line, you can't read it as anything other than like cynicism and snark. It's just so exhausting to listen to, and that's like really not her fault.
Yeah, yeah, it's well a pretty thankless position she's put in.
Mm-hmm.
And we like with Jurassic Park, it kind of like which Deep Blue Sea 2 is almost as good as but like it sort of like displaces the various ways in which you can be a cynic about this situation across the board. Like Sam Neill gets some, Jeff Goldblum gets some, Laura Dern gets some, and which also like leaves them with also like character-y stuff. It's not because their function isn't purely to be like, dinosaurs? You're putting dinosaurs in a park? That like it is like you said, Becky, pretty unfair to put all of that on one person,
because
everybody else is like kind of psyched about
Everyone else is on, like, everyone is down bad for the shark cum. Like, everyone's like, I love it. I'm in. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, this shark cum cures dysgraphia. Shout out Connor Scully, our next guest. I want to bring up one of my favorite characters slash weird just pieces of shit about this movie. The person who gets Dr. Misty Calhoun to, you know, take a little vacay from her college professorialship is this lawyer whose name I don't know. You know, he's the one who's like, hey, Dr. Misty, come to this this place where we're developing a cure to trypophobia using shark cum. And so once he gets everybody there, he goes to his room. And so, like, we don't see, he drops everybody off, and there's like 25 minutes of dialogue about, like, you know, what this doctor's doing, the ethics of it, that he's just nowhere to be seen in until shit starts to go awry and, like, the sharks start breaking in. And we cut to the lawyer in his room in the station, and he's writing in his diary, and there's a voiceover for it. I'm really not sure I'm not sure I agree with all this shark cum. And he's wearing the biggest headphones on planet Earth, and then he just pokes his head out and gets fucking eaten to shit. It's
the silliest thing ever. I loved it so much.
It's like, he's a weird vestigial organ of the screenplay, because I feel like there are so many other ways you could get these characters there without introducing another guy, because he really serves no other function than to just be like, come on down to Shark Cum Island. And then he just gets this weird little voiceover.
Why do we need to know what he thinks about anything? Like, why do we get his personal take on Durant's behavior? It was so amazing. He's wearing these, like,
inner world.
He's wearing these, like, dad as fuck, like, neon, like headphones that, like, have, like, a big earbud, just like you've never seen them before, like an offshoot, like, headphone brand makes them. It's so specific and general at the same time.
I know. He
fucking stole those earbuds from AJ Soprano. They interrupted him. The shark murder interrupted him right in the middle of that RJD2 song that he was relaxing / studying to.
I love it, and
just the voiceover. It's never, voiceover is not a tool used in this movie ever again. they relegate its the techniques used in its entirety to this one scene where we just kind of turn it into a Ken Burns documentary for about 40 seconds before the sharks come back to eat him. It's baffling.
I was trying to think of a way they could have solved that. Like, if he had some weird will to write a memoir and he was just, like, alone recording because he wanted to, like, make a buck off of this whole situation. Mm-hmm. And so he's just recording into, like, an old tape recorder or something.
Because
the voiceover is so ridiculous and misplaced, and just, like, all of a sudden we're doing this. Oh, we're not anymore.
Yeah. All, like, and so I thought that, you know, because they were giving so much weight to it, like, this diary would become, like, an important plot point.
Nope.
Like, somebody would discover it and being like, I'm going to send this to every paper in America. They need to know what you've been doing. No, it's just what this dude was doing.
And it's like, it's nothing we didn't know. We can see that Durant is being a little bit strange and acting, you know, he seems to have a sort of godlike complex. Mm-hmm. Like Misty already has stated, so it's not new information.
Well, he's also, like, he's got a lot of very telling comments that kind of, like, give away the game with stuff like that, where he's like, hey, does anyone have an urge to go swim at, like, 80 miles an hour through the deepest parts of the ocean? And they're like, no, do you? And he's like, yeah, I was just thinking we could do that and then go out for some, like, chicken wings. And they're like, dude, Are you fucking, like, are you guzzling Jaws cum again? are you?
We're gonna need a bigger load. Nothing, I'm sorry.
My favorite part of this whole movie, and it is a tough competition between this and the AP Chem montage, but it's definitely gotta be when the shark is fully eavesdropping on the lawyer and Durant's conversation. They're having this conversation about, like, what's going on and, like, how the sharks actually escaped, like, at the very beginning, like, pretty early on. And then it just cuts to, like, a shark just, like, fully looking in from, like, a window, just, like, listening, just watching their convo. Just, like, obviously we're supposed to glean that this shark is eavesdropping. And it is just, I was like, this is a perfect film. This is what didn't happen in the last one. I wanted shark eye contact. I wanted sentience in cinema. And I got it.
That was actually the question I was going to ask you, Becky, was like, because there is a lot more like, what the fuck do these sharks know in this one? Like, they seem to be kind of emotionally intelligent and are aware of, like, the concept of revenge. Because at the end of the movie, they're all trying to swim for a boat, Durant included, and the shark swims past everyone else just to go straight to Durant. And Durant is like, I told you I was her master. And then he just fucking gets, just guzzled down. It's great. But these sharks clearly know, like, who was in charge and who was doing this stuff to them.
I love it. I read it. I felt it. I thought it worked for me. I said, I know their different personalities. I sort of Myers-Briggs to them. They were all different. I loved it. I wanted more shark, though. Like, there was too much baby shark.
Baby shark,
we got it. It was hilarious. It was funny. And then it was sort of like, okay, like, too much baby shark. I wanted more of, like, the main sharks that they had been testing on who have, like true intelligence, not just, like, toddler fury. So I did miss that from the first one, and I missed a lot of the problem solving. They only had one hallway to shoot with, so there was really no problem solving. There was just a lot of baby shark running away.
I do want to hype up some of the kills, though, because an area in which this movie exceeds the first is in its gore. Like,
yeah.
Because the first one, I mean, it's not a not violent movie. Like, plenty of people are getting bitten TF in half, but, like, they really make it count in this one.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
My favorite kill is the guy who loves his wife very much runs into somebody else in a hallway, and the other person in the hallway is like, hey, man, like, don't say this stuff. Like, she would want you to live, man, because she got eaten. And so she would want you to live, man. Like, don't give up. And he's like, okay. And then they start going up a ladder and he dies. But they reveal it by, like, they're trying to pull him out of the hatch, which has been filling up and baby sharks are in it. And they only pull out his top half. Like,
and it's just, like, organs are falling out.
And what does he say? He says something after he's bitten in half. I couldn't make it out either, because I was going, ah, when he started talking while we're watching his intestines fall out of the bottom of him.
I think he said, I love my wife's jacket. I love that pink jacket.
How could I not eat? You know I eat when I'm excited. I love that his just, like, upper torso was just, like, climbing on its own.
Just on, like, raw upper body strength.
I want to see the other angle of that. Like, I want to see just, like, an upper half. Like one of Sid's toys from Toy Story. just crawling its way up the ladder. Entrails dangling like a marionette's feet.
It was so ridiculous. I think
it's all worth it if we cure dyslexia.
I really liked the first fisherman kill.
Yeah.
When the sharks came and he was just like a real villain, you know, just like hurting sharks, and sharks were like, you're about to get hurt. And they just ate all his limbs, and his little limbless body just like floated to the bottom. And I was like, this is going to be really fun.
Yeah, yeah. Like the shark fully just stops their little Abbott and Costello routine. And it sets us up for that really is the thing that I keep coming back to about that really is the only issue I have with this movie is like that's such a good setup for kind of like a nonstop thrill ride. But the thrill ride does have a few stops after that. The thrill ride has a couple of layovers in Atlanta where you need to go and get Jersey Mike's or something while you wait for the thrill ride to start back up again.
And are you going to a green, blue, or red Jersey Mike's? Which kind is it?
Dude, we need to go to Jersey Mike's. No, dude, we're going to stay here in Sparrow.
I love that you picked Jersey Mike's as the, like, Atlanta, like, delicacy that you gotta come here to get.
No, I was thinking specifically of the Atlanta airport.
Oh, like
airport,
airline food.
Where
oh,
every, yeah. Where every plane in the world lays over is the Atlanta airport. And so I have,
yes,
I have cried in that Jersey Mike's before, like when I was like, you know, coming back from a city that just like utterly defeated me. And I was just like having a horrible time. I do remember kind of trying to get through asking for a sandwich Mike's way, without like actually letting a tear fall from my face.
Is this in 2015?
2016.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's incredible.
So a year older, a year wiser.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a lot of fun watching this movie. I laughed a lot. I was a little bit gripped, but and only bored a little. Like, I just had a really great time. I just found, like, the journey was as fun as the unintended hilarity.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great way of putting it, because like I definitely don't want to discount. I mean, we spent pretty much this whole episode talking about like, isn't this wacky? But like, it's what all of this stuff is attached to is a perfectly functional thriller structure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. I think, you know, what this got me thinking a lot about was just the entire economy of straight to DVD feature filmmaking, and how it's something that I wish I understood a little bit better, because it feels like this whole like thing that I haven't uncovered yet that has this whole wealth of like lower budget interesting movies that are filled with faces who I wouldn't get to see if I only saw movies like in a movie theater in the last couple of years. Maybe this is the kind of like unfair, annoying lowering of the bar that I talk about a lot on this show, but I'm finding that it's very hard for me to root against like a straight to DVD movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that more often than not, in the case of like the more entertaining Honey sequels or this, I find myself thinking, you know, if they had one more week to work on this script and like $5 million more dollars in their budget, I would be very happy if this stuff was getting like released to theaters. This director, Darren Scott, I think, is mainly a horror guy. Mm-hmm. If I'm remembering correctly, I think he wrote Tales from the Hood.
I believe he, the same team wrote the third one. I think he may have also directed a couple of the segments across that franchise. Yeah, yeah. But I think he is mostly a horror guy. He does a good job with what he's afforded, quite literally, in this movie. Like, you know, we're ragging on the fact that about 30% of this movie is set in a single corridor that they just changed the lights out for.
But it's like, it's a clever fix.
Yeah, like what
that's
the fuck
a, that's
are you
a smart
do?
Low budget solution.
Yeah,
I just
yeah.
wish it was less like absolute Roy G. Biv red, green, and blue. Like, they could have tinted it and made it more scientist-y. But that's why it's so great, is because it's like kindergarten red, green, and blue.
Carl Durant taking shark cum to try and think of more colors and things like cyan flying from heliotrope.
Imagine he guzzles it down and his eyes dilate and he looks at the room and goes, yellow.
Just different Crayola crayons flashing.
Peach. We need a Caucasian colored room.
Burnt sienna? You're insane!
I didn't understand that Warner Brothers was doing a bunch of... that they were trying to get into the Universal business of doing... illegitimate bastard live action straight to DVD sequels. The ones that I know they've done, because they're no Universal, but then who is? They've done. There's a trilogy of Lost Boys movies. There's like the original one, and there's two straight to DVD sequels that came out pretty recently. I think Corey Feldman is in one of them. And there's the Scooby-Doo live action prequels that I think those were also on Cartoon Network for a little while. But I didn't even know this fucking existed, and it makes me real curious about 3. Because I don't know on what measure could this get a 0 on Rotten Tomatoes, but the threequel made 2 years later could have 76.
I will say that this made me really excited for 3, in a way that I'm like almost worried about, like, because I'm not sure how much I really want to get like hope invested in the idea of Deep Blue Sea 3.
Right.
Like,
it really got a 0. I was looking somewhere else where it got a 36, which feels way more appropriate. I think 0 is too harsh.
0 is far too harsh.
Like, it's not a good
error.
It's not a good movie. Like, I can't say it is, but there's like, but it is a movie, and like, there's elements about it that are like fun, and yeah, all the mistakes make it more enjoyable. So like, you can't give it a 0.
This is far more of a movie than either Bridget Jones sequel.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
That was just like, what? There was no idea, but it was very much like based on a book and just had no like through line. Whereas this is like fucking A to B, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, you know, those movies were like offensive sketch comedy.
Yes. And this is like, yeah, I want entrails, I want limbs torn off, and I want to laugh while I'm getting there.
I want you to control those sharks via remote sonar. I don't know, but there's only a little button they push.
In the first third of the movie, fucking forget that trick the rest of it.
It seems like it would have really helped out.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be way more key. But I was like, yeah, let's just all forget that and see how it goes if you just raw dog it.
Yeah, I had like... Dixon somehow convinced me that they were going to be like robot sharks and that there was going to be like a bad guy with a remote control who like points them around like an RC car, and that at least one of the sharks would have like an antenna coming out of his head, like a cute little elf.
I like that idea.
Yeah, that didn't happen, and now I have deep blue balls.
Honestly, me too. Just hearing about that, that's a good premise, especially with the whole machine versus man thing.
Yes.
Like, if you wanted to control like shark machinery, that'd be kind of sick.
Shark machinery?
Masharkery. I think what they need is like one of the big like beefcake dudes who's like does porn, who like plays one of the tough guys in this movie. I feel like he needs to get his brain through Adderall, like implanted into the mind, into the body of the shark that is being controlled by radio control, and he has to like will his shark body free from the control of another eccentric tycoon who is trying to fucking cure anxiety with shark pussy juice, and he has to will it. He has to be like, no, you don't control me. I'm the shark. I am the shark. You're
every
pussy
day
juice.
Every day I drink 6 ounces of shark quim so that I can talk on the phone.
Wait. As a woman. As a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, quim.
Are you looking up do sharks squirt?
Hey, did that shark squirt? I think
is
I'm
shark squirt piss?
I think I'm using quim correctly.
I thought this is where people also ask, where is a quim? Quim. Plural quim. Quims. Vulgar. Slang. The female genitalia. The vulva. Okay, see, I actually kind of love that. That's sort
I
of...
always thought quim was specific. I always thought quim was a slang term for squirt.
Oh, no.
It's
no.
Just the lip, baby. I am in my partner's father's office as we speak. Okay.
This is my shark cum, you mewling quim.
I've literally never heard that word before, and I am more the woman I'm more a woman I was than yesterday. I'm a woman.
That's what Loki says in Avengers at one point, right? Like, no, for real. Like people who were like on Reddit in 2012, and they were like, atheism is epic. Like, they saw Avengers, and there's a line where he calls Black Widow a mewling quim, and they were like, it's fucking epic that Joss found like a Shakespeare way to call someone a cunt in this movie. That happened.
I guess I don't have anything. I interrupted you to say. I'm so sorry. I guess I just like suck quim.
You suck fucking quim.
Not even shark quim. You suck fucking bear quim. It makes you stupider.
Dude, that's a fucking harsh.
You suck fucking bear quim, dude.
You suck fucking bear quim, and that makes you have a fear of dark submerged objects.
Oh, bear never. Cum gives you dyslexia. Oh my god.
If you drink both, nothing changes. If you drink both, nothing happens. You're just the same old you. They negate each other.
It's like when you drink coffee and alcohol at the same time. It's like one is a depressant, mm-hmm. one is a stimulant. It's actually hydrating you. Mm. So if you take it in conjunction with Adderall, it also cancels that out.
Durant started with bear quim, but the only effect he could make happen is you had to call somebody else in the room to kill a roach.
We're going to lose our bear audience. Fuck.
But our shark audience is going to...
Through the roof, baby.
Big Finn through the roof.
And talking like... quim.
We're
people
the
who
devil.
Love the word quim, we're fucked. Thanks for listening to Bear Quim. Should we rank these?
I really enjoyed this movie. I think right now I'm gonna go a straight 1, 2, 3 with honestly like not that big a chasm between 1 and 2. I mean, 2 obviously is a lot shaggier. It's got a lot more like just structural problems, but I had about as good a time watching it as I did with 1. It was a lot of fun, and I can only hope that 3 stays in the same vein of just like, you know, getting in and out and having some silly shit and having some deliberately fun shit and having some you know, bonkers performances. I'm really excited about Deep Blue Sea 3.
So I'm thinking it's gonna be 1, 3, 2, meaning I love the whole franchise. I really loved 2, though not a good movie. I had an excellent time watching. I think 1 is a really good movie. Upon zooming out, I'm just like, that was so much fun. such a valiant effort at making, you know, a smart shark movie. So but I do think, just based on the 71%, I'm like so curious. And so, I mean, it came out last year. Like, I think three's going to be kick ass. I'm so stoked.
Also, apparently, it is a direct sequel to this one.
Oh, wow.
Like, it picks up right where Deep Blue Sea 2 leaves off. So I hear.
I don't know if I like that, actually.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sort of done with these people. I want a whole new fresh set of people who have, like, no real vibe.
I want a different highly decorated ex-Navy SEAL.
New pair of cheeks in that suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want a new character named Strom Thurmond, but apparently they had no idea that that was a guy. I just liked how that sounded.
Oh my god. Dwayne Neckvein.
Rich
Dwayne
Dickery.
The Vein Neck Vein.
Carl Protein.
Nick Creatine.
Daniel Lactic Acid.
Paul Peptides. All right, sorry.
Mark McGuire. I have no fucking idea what to make of three, or how to even quantify, like, between one and two. Like, I mean, one cost more. Like, one has more money on the screen.
I like it.
But is it that much better than this? Is it really? I'm going to say 3-1-2 is the future that I choose for myself. I want to like 3 the best. I want it to be the Honey 4 of Deep Blue Sea 3.
I suppose I want that too. I just don't know if I'm going to get it. But I agree with you. That sounds incredible.
I, for one, am thrilled about the upcoming adventures of Himbo B12 Chin-Up.
What did you say?
I called the future hero of Deep Blue Sea B12 Pull-Up Chin-Up.
Chin-Up.
It was really funny.
B12 what?
Chin up.
Okay. I'm sure if I'd heard it the first time, I bet it would have been so fucking funny. But instead, I am really stressed out.
Beach, that absolutely pissed off cerebral understanding of, okay, that B12 chin up. It's amazing.
I added it up in my head and I'm like, all right, I bet...
It tracks.
Okay, that's a joke. I bet it was funny. Yeah.
Who knows what you would have done if you had heard me say Jack Probiotic.
for the dear listener at home, my laptop is so fucking hot right now. You could cook a steak on it, and my internet keeps fucking up on me. So I hope you can treat yourself to the delicious audio quality that I'm sure you've already been enjoying for, what are we clocking this in at? Like an hour and change? Hour 10? Hour 20?
Hour probably 30.
Yeah.
We got a lot of meat on this one.
We do. And I apologize for my audio quality. I am away from my usual incredible, impeccable setup with a really good chair and like desk and just like everything really high quality. And it's not worse now. That I'm away. So sorry about that, but also it's better, right?
Becky, do you think you could convince Jake's parents to like let you bring that chair home?
No, but I am gonna ask our audience, if you want bonus episodes, you will have to fund the purchase of my new chair.
We have a furniture based Patreon where yeah. if you give us a chair, you get bonus episodes.
I just want like a really plush chase to record my podcast on. So if I could just like lay and record, I feel like that'd be like really sick and necessary. So
mm-hmm. yeah, this is the fainting couch where I do all my podcasts.
Well, everybody, hop in the jacuzzi. Get those jets popping, because that's the same as the baby sharks, and so I hope you relax to the sound of their gnawing on your flesh.
Push a fucking nerd right into the Pacific.
Yeah, get him out there.
Tell him to walk it off. Tell yeah. him he's fine.
He's fine. He's acting like a baby.
That wasn't cool.
All right, bye everybody. Dead Horses, Dixon, Becky, and PJ. You can find us on Instagram at Dead Horse Podcast. We'd like to thank Max Huffman for our art. I did the music. Christ, there's something I'm forgetting. Fuck. Yeah, I got nothing. I'm sorry.